This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It is episode 232. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals, and my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, who covers the Arizona Cardinals for SB Nation's Revenge of the Birds. Seth, this is kind of a bonus show because we didn't think there would be a whole lot going on, but what do you know? There is a whole bunch to talk about after just a few days of training camp. How have things been over there at the site? What's new over there at Revenge of the Birds?
Not much. Just, you know, trying to keep up with all the going on. It's been a, you know, whirlwind through the first 2 day or, you know, weekend, and then 2 days of tackle. And then no pads on Monday or Tuesday when they came back, which was weird, right? Like, that was different. But a lot of information, a lot of good things. You know, you and I had a little tip this morning that they were going to be signing somebody. And so we both were able to prepare until the team actually announced it and push one button and get things posted. That was convenient for us. So, you know, all of that, it's just been busy, and they still have two open roster spots. That's the craziest thing.
That's one of the more interesting things of what's happening at camp. So far the camp opened last week. They opened up on Wednesday with the physicals, the run test. They had practice on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Pads went on Saturday. Pads on Sunday. They took the day off on Monday, as they you can't practice more than 4 days in a row, I think, is the rule. And then they had practice again on Tuesday, and that's where we're at because we're recording on a Tuesday night. So this episode we're going to talk about, it's about training camp, pretty much what we said. So we're reacting to things that we've seen in training camp. We'll talk about general looks and observations of what I saw when I was there and what we've gleaned from what other people have seen. We'll talk about it, specifically the wide receiver room and a guy who quietly has kind of taken the lead among the rookies. We'll look at the quarterback position. We'll look at the injury impact that there is, in particular with Hassan Reddick, who's going to be out until probably the beginning of the season. Robert Kimdichie was released. We'll react to that and then talk about some of the roster moves that has happened. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's talk about initial camp observations without getting specific about players. Talk about how Cliff Kingsbury's run things, the way we've seen the personnel used, and the looks on the offense. What is there that what are your initial observations and reactions to the first few days of camp?
I mean, the first thing that you just stands out, and it's something you and I have talked about on our sites, is just the tempo. Like, there's definitely a different pace to the way Cliff wants things done. And, I mean, when we talk about tempo and pace of play and things of that nature, it all makes sense because they want to play fast. They've talked about, what, 95 plays or whatever?
That's the number thrown out there, which is obviously you have to think a bit of hyperbole, but I don't know. Maybe they're serious.
Right, and I mean, yeah, maybe they are. Maybe that's what they want to do, but you look at it, they want to get, and it's something that one of my writers has written about quite a bit. They want to get as much or as, you know, many reps and good reps as they can. And that matters in the air raid offense. That matters in getting used to working at a high tempo, but also seeing things, you know, getting into sync together, getting on in rhythm, things of that nature. And so I think the tempo has been something that is really quite impressive so far.
And I've noticed that as well. I will say this. Over the years, I've been to a lot of training camps, and this really, there's kind of a mix of the Bruce Arians approach and the Steve Wilks approach, because Bruce Arians ran effective, you know, he was big on not wasting time, and what we've seen in Kingsbury's way of running things, there isn't a lot of downtime. They move quickly from one drill to the other. There's lots of things going on at the same time. Even walkthroughs. In walkthroughs, there tend to be a lot of downtime as they're practicing one thing or another. But they when they go from one thing, when there's other guys standing around, they're doing other drills at different positions. And so there doesn't seem to be a lot of wasted time. Now, they do get some work in, and then they do the team type calisthenics where they do the dynamic stretching and they kind of get their bodies ready. But it's kind of interesting because while they do go with tempo in practice, it reminds me of Bruce Arians because they do some of the same things other than Bruce was anti-stretching as a team because it was a waste of time, in his opinion, of practice time. Now, Cliff, as from what I've seen and what I've heard from players, is that he doesn't like to waste time. He doesn't like – so if they get all the reps in, he's okay with ending practice early. But he's going to pack things into practice. He doesn't hold needless meetings. Some of his meetings are super quick. He doesn't overkill things. He doesn't have walkthroughs every day. And then, of course, what has gotten the kind of a lot of attention here locally, and I haven't seen it catch on nationally, is they have their don't call it a snack break where they bring the in and out. The one thing I didn't ask any of the players, because Kingsbury's okay, no, it's not a snack break, it's halftime, and so they take a little breather, they can have some hydration. I would imagine that during halftime that the guys get to eat something in the locker room. They might have a little pick-me-up in the locker room during the game. So he is about simulating things, and there's a lot of things. I mean, you could say there's a lot different between him and Wilkes, or he and Bruce Arians. But the truth is, a lot of what they do is similar. Now, I will say this. Cliff Kingsbury is very, very against, like, giving real information out in his press conferences. He did say that Kamdiche came in out of shape. That kind of was, I think, purposeful. Now, when Steve Wilks and Bruce Arians typically would be up front of who's missing practice, who's got what injury, the Kingsbury won't give anything up unless you specifically ask, and then he tries to be super vague about it. Arians would say, okay, not practicing this afternoon is so-and-so, 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 got a knee, he's day-to-day, this guy's going to be out a little while. Kingsbury, we haven't gotten anything. So Chad Williams has missed practice for a few days. We don't know what it is. Has DJ Swearinger missed practice? It's a soft tissue. We don't know anything other than that. When it was Hassan Reddick, he did not want to tell anything. You know, he's a procedure. He just doesn't want to give anything up. Even when the vet day's off, he didn't say who was having the day off. When we asked him, yeah, there was vet days off. Anyone coming out today? Oh, yeah, Fitz, Suggs, and somebody else he can't remember. It's Patrick Peterson. So he's been very – he doesn't like to give anything up, whether that's the effect from coming from college, but they just don't talk about injuries. They don't talk about injuries at all because of the – and part of it's dealing because it's a school environment. And the pros, I mean, and I'm getting the impression that when it comes to the injury report, he will just tell the guys to wait for the injury report and not really comment on anything after that. Now, personnel-wise, is there anything that you've been surprised with, formations that you've heard about, or even the people they're running with the different first team, second team, or whatever?
No, I mean, when you look at how they've lined up and, you know, who's come out and who's running where, I think the biggest thing to me has been they really are kind of going, you know, 10 personnel or one back, you know, no tight personnel or even 11 with, you know, one back and one tight end. Obviously, Max Williams, when they're going as an inline tight end, he seems to be the guy at this point. Wouldn't you?
Yes, most certainly. Now, granted, we haven't had Charles Clay out there, so but The only time they go in line, it's 87. It's Williams. I personally haven't seen two tight ends on the field yet. When, like, in the 2 days of practice, I never saw it. They ran three and four wideouts with the tight end sometimes. And then even sometimes it was two backs, three wide. So they ran 20 sometimes. And so it really is, and I've always been of the opinion that it was probably going to be much more 11 personnel than 10 personnel. I might be wrong, but we haven't seen Charles Clay. Charles Clay is the more versatile of the tight ends. He can do more things. So maybe that changes when he comes back. But, you know, the spread out, four or five wide, that really apparently is a thing.
Yeah, and it makes sense kind of when you just look at the roster constructions. I mean, it's not that, you know, it's bad to have Max Williams on the field. It's just, would you rather have, and, you know, we'll get into specific players, but would you rather have Max Williams in there or would you rather have, you know, Andy Isabella? You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, like, would you rather have Ricky Seals-Jones or would you rather have Keyshawn Johnson? Like, that's kind of what it's coming down to in these, you know, 10 versus 11 personnel discussions is maybe it just makes more sense to have a better player out there. Now, obviously, if you want to run the ball a little more, you probably need Max in there. But it just in general, that might be why we see maybe, you know, maybe it's not 30% or 35%, but if we, I think it was 8% last year, was like the highest. It was either 6 or 8. I got to look back, but it was like the highest number of four wide receiver personnel in the NFL. And you know, so if the Cardinals are at like 20 or 25%, that's still a huge jump.
That really is. And something that I've seen on Sunday, it seemed when I was at practice, it seemed like they were being more deliberate about working on the running game. And you can tell philosophically that the idea of bringing in extra blockers in the middle is kind of the anti-Kingsbury thing. So his idea for running the ball is to spread the defenders out. And so even if you don't have a tight end, so maybe one is a tight end, so you give David Johnson space, so instead of giving more blockers to help him in the middle, you just spread the defenders out so that there are fewer big guys in the box. So if they're going 10, 11 personnel, that means, guess what? They got one less defensive lineman or linebacker in the game in the middle of the field. Instead, you've got an extra DB. That's good for Johnson. That's going to be interesting to see if that's successful because that's asking more from your offensive line, and it asks a little bit of your receivers, but it's a different philosophy that is the anti-NFL. Now, granted, we do see a lot of this type of offense in other places, but you see like the Detroit Lions that are going to like the main, like too tight is like their staple. Or the Seattle Seahawks, who almost always have a tight end on the field. It's just creating a different type of running game.
Well, even the New England Patriots. I mean, they, you know, with Gronk, they kind of made it back in vogue to have two tight ends again.
Well, granted, when you have a monster like Gronk, like he's right. I mean, he's special.
But he's special. But that goes back to what I said. Like sometimes. You have to, like, there's two thought processes. And one is that you are being different just to be different. But sometimes you're being different because that's what your talent level dictates, or that's what your talent in general dictates. And so when you look at the Cardinals right now, it just may be that the talent on the roster dictates that they don't use tight ends, or they use them, you know, sparingly. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. That's kind of my opinion on that. That's what would make Cliff innovative to me, is that if he said, like, look, Max Williams is a nice football player, but he's not a better player than Andy Isabella. So guess what? I'm going to play Andy Isabella, and then in certain situations, I'll bring Max on the field. You know, like I said, whether it's Andy, whether it's Keyshawn, whether it's, you know, Kevin White, Demir Byrd, Trent Sherfield, you know, whoever it is outside of Larry and Christian, that to me states that, hey, this is what we see as the talent of our team. And that was one of the things, you know, that I think a lot of coaches get caught up in. It's like, this is, you know, all we, you know, yeah, we have, you know, really good receivers, but you can't put four wide on the field every play. Well, why can't you? Because that's just not the way it's done. So you can't do it. Like, that's not how, well, no offense, but if you put, you know, Jim Dre on the field, is your team really better than if you had, you know, at his peak, Michael Floyd or healthy John Brown? No, they're not. But, oh, well, we have to get, you know, we have to have that tight end out there to be. No, you don't. Like, if the tight end's not better, it's your team's actually going to get worse just because he plays tight end. So that's where I come from in that. Like, that's what's innovative to me, is when you are willing to say, hey, like, my best 11 are, you know, four wide receivers and one running back, and that's how we're going to line up.
Well, when you think about it this way, so if they've got four receivers out on the field, that's going to force nickel and force sometimes dime. And if even if you're talking about the running game, guess what you've just done? You have taken, you've now made it five or six in the box for David Johnson. And what we saw last year, he does not thrive in the heavy box sets. I mean, he ran into a lot of big boxes. He had fewer negative plays last year, but he had far fewer explosive plays. And so, well, now you get him into space to make somebody. So he's going to have to, he doesn't have, there's going to be one guy for a lineman, and now he can just make a move and get out and move. It's going to be interesting. I'm actually very excited to see how this works. And it helps when you have the risk, because you're going to force teams to either have a mismatch in the passing game in the slot on someone with a linebacker, or you're taking big guys out of the middle, which is big for David Johnson and Kyler Murray.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, and to that point, what has to happen is you can't have just Fitz and Kirk the offense. Like is happening in training camp is great, but these guys, whoever the other one or two are, have to translate it over to the season, because that's what's going to open up the field. Like, if you only have two guys out there that can catch, well, then it's really easy to defend still, because you're like, all right, you can go four wide. We're just going to sit in a, you know, a faux heavy box and make, you know, Chad Williams beat us. Okay, well, that didn't work. So now, you know, so now these new guys have to prove that they can, that they're threats and that they can do something. And I think so far, as we'll get into, is that there's at least one that you're excited about, and probably two.
Coming up next on the Rise Up SeaWorld podcast, we're going to come back and talk about the receiver room in general, who's standing out, and it might surprise you who it is. That's coming up next on the Rise Up SeaWorld podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up SeaWorld podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's time to talk receivers. It's the, of everything that's going on with the Arizona Cardinals, that's where the most attention is, because of how bad the unit was a year ago and how much talent they added to it, just how much they threw at that position. They drafted three receivers. They signed Kevin White. They signed Demir Byrd. You bring back guys like Chad Williams and Trent Sherfield. You put in a new scheme that's receiver-heavy and receiver-friendly, supposedly. But we've seen... And here's the thing. All three of the receivers have looked good at times, but the one guy that is standing out is the one people spoke publicly about the least externally, and that would be Keyshawn Johnson. And in fact, up until Tuesday's practice, he wasn't even the one making the biggest plays. So we've got Andy Isabella, you've got Hakeem Butler, and you've got Keyshawn Johnson. And as of right now, it looks like he has the inside track to be even their number three receiver, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it sounds like from everything that we've been hearing is that thus far, the guy that has kind of made himself into the third wide receiver is Keyshawn Johnson. And one of the things, let me find it. I was talking to some buddies that work in the league, and I got to find what he said. But they said, I texted them about today about how he was having another good day. And somebody said he's Rashard Higgins, who's been, blowing up at Cleveland camp. You look at it with the Browns, and they've got Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, and the guy that's getting all the buzz is Rashard Higgins. Like, that's impressive. And it's, he outplays his athletic testing position because he knows how to play the position. The other guy said being able to catch and get open is really, really helps. And that's what people miss. Like, 50-50 balls, those contested catches, jump balls, things like that, those are all great, but it's even better when you just are open. And you just got, what I'm saying? Like, if you run good routes, you're able, you look at a guy like Keenan Allen, obviously Fitz wasn't ever really a burner per se, but he was a fantastic route runner. I mean, he still is, and he's still getting open every day. You look at those type of players, Anquan Boldin, those are guys in the same mold, or Keyshawn Johnson's in the same mold as. He's not an elite athlete. He is not this guy that's just going to open up and run right by you. He's nuanced, but he understands how to work his routes. He understands how to set up defensive backs from one route to the next. And that, to me, says more than anything else about him, because he's creating this opportunity for himself to be an impact player for this team early on.
Yeah, he garnered some high praise from general manager Steve Keim. When NFL Network was at camp on Sunday, they talked to a lot of people. Steve Keim says that Johnson is the potential rookie who could break out. And the more I think about it, I'll be honest, as much as I liked what I saw to Keyshawn Johnson in – well, I didn't watch much of him, but I saw him against ASU, and I saw him against Boise State in their conference championship. And he was just so good. But drafted in the sixth round, people were buzzing about how he's going to be. I'm like, okay, let's just hold on. Hold on. Sixth-round picks don't always make the roster. So he's going to have an open – it's going to be a hard – But here's something that Kurt Warner said over the weekend when I heard him talking to some guys. And it's interesting about how they have the talent set up in that wide receiver room. And the fact that Keyshawn is different gives him the best opportunity to make an impact, because you look at Larry Fitzgerald, who has done more work inside than outside and had more success inside and outside than in the last few years. Christian Kirk is widely accepted as a better inside receiver than outside receiver. That doesn't take away from his outside ability, but he's even better inside. Andy Isabella projects to be more of the slot. And so the question becomes, who can be the guy that wins outside? Keyshawn's that guy, apparently. And he does it not through elite speed, but his ability to be very smooth and efficient and effective in his movements to get open and make plays. And so the fact that he does things a little differently. Now, Hakeem Butler could be that guy, but what we've seen in camp so far, and I'll say he's been the flashiest but the least consistent. On Sunday, he made some quite amazing catches, but you see that he's limited in some of the things. He's had some drops in traffic, but as kind of his skill set, he's really good on the perimeter. He's really good for jump balls, and he can make great contested catches, but in traffic, in the middle of the field, he's been less consistent and less separated. Andy Isabella is like, all three of those receivers have looked good. I will say from my observations in the 2 days I was at practice, Andy Isabella flashed, Hakeem Butler flashed, Keyshawn Johnson never flashed on the field, but then you see the reps that he's the one rookie who's getting first team reps, and that tells you something. Now, it didn't start that way, but he got some first team reps on Sunday. And part of that is because Fitz was out that day, and so he was moved up to the first team, but we're seeing him consistently do things. Now, there was one play, but it wasn't so much Keyshawn. He had Patrick draped all over him, really, really tight coverage, and Kyler threaded the needle, and Keyshawn made a really nice catch. Now, on Tuesday, he flashed. He made a highlight reel catch on the sideline. He caught a 65-yard bomb to end practice, and so he is showing up, but at the same time, these other rookie receivers are not failing. It's just Butler. They are almost exactly what we thought they were, except Keyshawn is far exceeding. Butler is a guy who flashes but needs work. Isabella, he's steady, makes plays. He's super fast, super quick. But it's Keyshawn who has this distinct skill set, which might set him up to be an impact player in year one. And it makes sense. He is the most refined player, which means he should look better early on. And then the fact that what Cliff Kingsbury said is that he picked up the offense really quickly. The mental side makes it so that he, along with his refined skills, can be impactful early on. While Akeem Butler very well could be in a year or two, develop into a top number two type receiver, will need some, because he's limited. I always thought he was going to be a limited type contributor. He's going to be a high variance player, in my opinion. He'll have a couple of big games because he'll have big plays, and then there will be games he doesn't do much. He's not as consistent. Keyshawn, we'll have to see if this continues and if he stays healthy, but it looks like we might see the Cardinals have a huge steal in the sixth round.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, when you look at this, they're not going to have three 1,000-yard receivers. They may not even have one 1,000-yard receiver. They could have two guys in the, you know, over 900. They could have two guys over, 700 yards. And then you have David Johnson, who we're not even talking about. And so if you have, you know, four receivers that are getting you 3,500 yards, that's just as good as three receivers getting you 3,000 yards. So in the end, we know who the top two are. It's the third one that's been a bit surprising. And I don't think Isabella running as like wide receiver four in those four wide receiver sets would be all that surprising. It's just going to be if Keyshawn ends up being your wide receiver three, that's going to be a bit of an upset just in terms of, you know, draft position, expectation, things of that nature. But again, the best players play when you've got, and I want, you know, to reiterate this as much as I can. I'm not saying he's going to be Larry Fitzgerald, but when you have a guy that plays in a similar style to Larry Fitzgerald in Keyshawn, and then you have Larry Fitzgerald, and then you have Christian Kirk, like, that's a really nice thing, because now all of a sudden you have two guys that can win short, intermediate, and you know, can sneak by you long, and then you have guys in Kirk and Isabella who are both short, long guys, and then you've got Butler who's the ultimate deep threat. Like, so now all of a sudden you have a diversified, you know, wide receiver group who can win. You know, you've got guys who can win at every level consistently. And then, you know, you kind of look, again, going back to the Browns, they're not the same names, but, you know, if you have a Jarvis Landry and you say that's Fitz, and then you have a Rashard Higgins and you say that's Keyshawn Johnson, that's a really good thing to pair with a guy. And, you know, Christian Kirk is nowhere near Odell Beckham, but when you talk about just kind of skill set and how they work, that's how you can kind of utilize it and foresee it. And so, you know, that'll be kind of what you see, I think, moving forward, if Keyshawn can, you know, keep his hold on that wide receiver three position.
What's interesting is that as Keyshawn Johnson emerges, Kevin White becomes expendable and almost unneeded and obsolete. Granted, he's the most physically talented player and in that room by far. The most physically talented. He's got size, he's got speed, he's athleticism, playmaking skills. But then you have to figure in, can he play special teams? Because if he's going to be wide receiver 5, 6, 7, he's got to be able to play on teams. It's been interesting to me the playing time that you see Pharaoh Cooper and Demir Byrd getting on the first team still. Especially when I haven't been personally super impressed with anything that they've done. I know that Cooper does not have great straight line speed, but he is very, very elusive. So he's a guy that if you get in space can do things. And Demir Byrd is the fastest guy on that team. So he's a guy to watch, and those two players will both be in the mix for the return game. But I continue to be surprised that those guys are getting first team reps early on. Although maybe I shouldn't. Maybe that's one of the things that we're going to find out, is that with these open practices, part of the game that Kingsbury is playing is with the public view of the depth charts, whether they're keeping that private from the players, like they don't know, they're just following. So okay, twos, you're one of the twos, you're the ones, and maybe they're keeping that depth chart hidden.
Yeah, and that could, like you said, that could just be part of the game that Kingsbury is playing at this point, and trying to decide how he wants to, you know, kind of unleash his first lineup and everything. And so it's interesting because, you know, he's already kind of talked about, oh, we're going to be vanilla, and people are like, oh, so we're not going to see the air raid. No, you're gonna see the air raid. Like, that's what their offense is. The thing is, you're not going to see the shifts, you're not going to see the personnel, you're not going to see you're not going to see the same type of plays. What you're going to see is you're just going to see, you know,
you're going to see the double bunches. You're going to see the double bunch receivers that they do, where they stack the two receivers on each side. But you're not going to see complexity to it.
Right. You're not going to see any of the nuances of it or the interesting aspects. You're just going to see, hey, they're three wide. Hey, they're four wide. Like, that's what you're going to see. And quite frankly, I don't even know how much of, like, Kyler Murray and Larry Fitzgerald you're going to see. Like in Christian Kirk, for that matter. Like, it's probably going to be a whole lot of Keyshawn Johnson, Hakeem Butler, Andy Isabella, and then Trent Sherfield, and yeah, Demary Byrd and Pharaoh Cooper. Like, that's where the battle's going to end, really, is who's going to win 3 through 7, probably, because they'll keep probably 7, yeah. Especially if they're going to go 4 wide. They probably have to keep at least 7. So who's going to win those 3 through 7 slots in that wide receiver room? That's what's going to be so interesting.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about the next position group that's of interest, that's at cornerback. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk cornerback. Patrick Peterson, he's going to be suspended. How are things going to play out the rest of the way? So here's what we've seen so far. Obviously, Robert Alford has been practicing, well, very physical. And after that, an interesting observation by comments made is what we've seen when Patrick is out there, that Tremaine Brock plays in the slot. When Patrick is not in there, Tremaine plays outside, Byron Murphy plays inside. Otherwise, when Byron Murphy, when they've got Patrick in there, that it is Byron Murphy playing outside, and then he slides inside. Actually, no. One day he slid inside, and then other days he did not. So when it was Patrick, out there, when Patrick was out there practicing, then Murphy would get start on the outside, move inside. When he was playing nickel in first team, on the second team we saw Dietrich Nichols with Nate Brooks and Chris Jones on the outside. People have been saying that they think that Byron Murphy will be the number two corner. We on this show, and I in particular, have said that probably isn't the best way to go because of the temporary nature of that. Where if you have Byron playing outside and Tremaine playing inside, what are you going to do when Patrick comes back? Then you're giving Byron a whole new role. While it would make sense to play Tremaine part-time on the outside and Byron inside. Now, it might be that Byron beats out Tremaine and so is the outside-inside slide, but it would make more sense to me that he sticks exclusively to the nickel. And there was a comment made recently because they keep talking about Byron and nickel, and that's the guy, that's the position they really focused on after the draft. Is it really that hard to believe that they're going to use the veteran Tremaine Brock in the temporary position?
No, that makes the most sense. I mean, one, like you said, veteran. I mean, that's the key term right there. This is a guy that has played outside. He is far and away better inside, but so is the rookie. And one of the things that we loathed about Bruce Arians and then whatever last year was this inability to put guys in a position to be effective. And so can Byron Murphy play outside? Absolutely. Is it the best utilization of his skill set? No. And so what Vance has done is he said, look, and we've talked about this because we've called Tremaine Ben-Wickery, right? Like that's what we've said pretty much since they signed him, is that this is the same thing. Hey, we need you to do this. We realize you're probably going to give up passing yards. You're probably going to give up catches, and you're probably going to get burned at times. But you know what? You're a 30, 31-year-old, you know, 9-10-year veteran. We don't care because what we don't want is Byron Murphy getting torched on the outside. And then all of a sudden he's got an issue with confidence, or he's got an issue where he doesn't believe in himself, or worse off, now you're saying, like, look, he can never go outside because he's already been exposed. We have to keep him inside. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's something you and I have talked about, but it seemed like it was missed by so many people. I thought it was logical. I don't know. Did you? Like, I thought this was that we knew that's kind of what they drafted him for.
Right. I always thought that he was going to be their nickelback. Now, as camp started, I started to believe that maybe he would be technically number two and slide inside, but maybe not. I still think that the vet's going to play outside, and I think that's how they would like. So he will have to clearly be better than Brock outside, which is interesting. The one thing that of all this has happened is since the start of camp, Brock has publicly said he'd prefer to play inside. And part of that is strategic, because if he's their nickelback, that's the permanent position as opposed to being the outside corner, which everyone knows is a 6-week job. That's it.
Right, exactly. And so the whole situation is this. If Brock struggles, there's one move. If Murphy struggles, there's two moves. And that's the whole idea, is that Brock will be the guy for 6 weeks. He just is. Like, unless it is like Brandon Williams level of bad, it's going to be Brock for 6 weeks outside, and you leave Murph inside, and then if both of them are bad, well, then you kind of got a problem, right? Like, all right, then you have other problems. But if Brock is average or worse, then it's really easy because Patrick comes back and slides right in. Murphy's already there. Okay, we don't need to move the rook because he's playing better than the vet anyways. If Brock is playing well and Murphy's not, okay, well, it's two moves, but it's okay. It's okay to make those two moves because it's the best moves for the team. So that's, you know, again, you're looking – people – and I think the Cardinals are doing a good job of this without – saying it, and I think Cliff and the staff have done a really nice job of this. They're not necessarily looking for who is going to help them win the most games in those 6 weeks. They're looking at what is the best way for us to set up our post week 6 run. And because they realize that you're talking about a rookie head coach, you're talking about a rookie, I mean, offensive coordinator in terms of Cliff calling plays at the NFL level. You obviously have a rookie quarterback. So the defense needs to, by week 6, when Patrick comes back, it needs to be kind of a seamless integration, or week 7, I guess, after week 6. But it needs to be a seamless integration. It needs to be a situation where the defense is playing at a high enough level that they're either keeping the offense in games while they still get on track, or that they're not losing games, you know, 38-45. So that those are the biggest things right now. And so I respect it because I think this is kind of all Vance. I think it's Vance going, this is what I see as the best route for the team to go moving forward, because that's the thing. Tremaine knows how to play the slot position in the NFL. He knows how to play the slot position in Vance's defense. The hardest thing would be this, and it goes back. If they put Byron outside, no matter what, he's not going to play when Patrick comes back. I mean, unless he is Deion Sanders reincarnate, you're not going to not play Patrick Peterson when he comes back from his suspension. So you're going to move him, and he's going to inevitably go back inside. Well, now he's got a – now all of a sudden you're doing the Hassan Reddick thing, right? Like, okay, we're going to have you at slot. Okay, now we need you outside. Okay, now you're going back to the slot. Like, that's what you don't want to do, especially – and not that Byron has never played corner before. Obviously, that's what he played in college. That's where they drafted him. But in the NFL, in his first defensive scheme, don't you want to have him feeling confident in one position rather than uncertain in two or three?
And it makes sense. It makes sense now. Yeah. Coming next on the Rise FC Red Podcast, we're going to talk a little bit more about we're going to talk about Hassan Reddick and his injury and what that means for the linebacker crew. Does it really matter? That's coming next on Rise FC Red. We're back on the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We've had our first real significant injury, even though it not necessarily is significant. Hassan Reddick is out for a few weeks after knee surgery, arthroscopic surgery, to reportedly trim a meniscus, which is a 4-6 week injury. Vance Joseph said he's going to be back by week 1. This feels like Deion Buchanan again a year later. And while it's unfortunate for Reddick because he needs the reps, he needs them bad, but it creates an opportunity to see what's behind him. And what they have are a bunch of young players now behind. They don't have a lot of experience. They are 2 years and fewer. You've got Dennis Gardeck. You've got Ezekiel Zeke Turner. You have Tanner Vallejo. You've got Joe Walker and Pete Robertson. And now the undrafted guy, Dante Booker, who just came off PUP. Vance Joseph says, that's a deep position. Do we believe him?
I mean, from a like paper standpoint, no. But you have to have faith in what he's done with linebackers. He's done a nice job. you know, you kind of wrote about this in that Gardeck kind of fits the mold of what he looks for in his linebackers, right? So this is, it's not optimal, obviously. And I've seen a lot of people say, oh, at least it happened now, as opposed to in the season. But the whole thing is this, and I wrote about this. Hassan Reddick needs those reps,
yes.
Like terribly bad. Like, he's been a really bad inside linebacker or off-ball linebacker or whatever he was supposed to be in Steve Wilkes' defense. He wasn't good at it in what, you know, in James Betcher's defense. He needs the reps. He needs the time. He needs to learn to read and trust his eyes and see, you know what he's seeing. And now all of a sudden he's not going to get that. He's not going to get it at all until real games. Like, that's the most concerning thing to me, is that it's another kind of setback for a guy that they needed big things out of this year.
And for me, it is it's a thing to worry about. Now, granted, he by all appearances, he's made progress, and having a guy like Jordan Hicks on the field is going to be helpful. And I think schematically, it will be easier to do if they're getting the edge play and the defensive line play, as we've talked about on this show. If you get schematic, solid play up front on the defensive line, you get the pass rush, you get the cover behind. The players in the middle of the field, they don't have to be super talented. They need to be smart, and they need to be disciplined. Dennis Gardeck is very interesting because Vance Joseph mentioned him early in the offseason while Reddick was still set. There's a lot to like about Gardeck. He's very strong. He's a physical specimen. He's fast, he's athletic, and he's super competitive and plays with a chip on his shoulder. You saw the intensity when he played special teams. He has the perfect mentality to play that position next to Hicks. Now, that said, I can totally see him keeping Reddick on the bench, or at least partially on the bench. Say, when Reddick is back, Gardeck is your base linebacker and Reddick is your cover linebacker, because that what we know about Reddick, that's what perhaps is his greatest strength outside of his potential as a pass rusher, as a blitzer, is his ability to move in space and cover guys. Dennis Gardeck, I think low-key, might end up being a guy who is important on this defense this year.
And I think that the way that the Cardinals are set up, that's not a bad thing. I mean, obviously you want Hassan Reddick to be not only the guy, but to be, you know, kind of a guy that breaks out this year. But if Gardeck steps up, it's still, you still have your linebacker set for the next 2 years. You still have Reddick, like you said, that has a role that can probably play at worst as a, you know, coverage linebacker. And so then you have Hicks and Reddick who can both do that, while Gardeck is kind of your down linebacker in the Kevin Minter role from a couple years ago. So it's not ideal, but it's still, if Gardeck is good enough to keep Reddick off the field, that's not a bad thing either.
That's true. What's the interesting thing is that the Vance Joseph, that you clearly like, you can tell what he likes. He wants smart guys who are physical and are fast. And that's what they have. They have like a Joe Walker, they've got a Tanner Vallejo and Zeke Turner. Those are all very athletic guys. They're unproven. But again, like we've talked about, that inside linebacker position, especially the weak side guy, not the Mike, like Hicks, they're basically pawn pieces in the defense almost that are interchangeable. Hicks has to make the calls, but if Hicks is making the right calls, all they have to do is make the plays when they come their way. And so that's going to be interesting to see. Will that be the case? I'll be interested to see what happens, because I don't think Reddick will be able to play in the preseason. And if he doesn't, do they put him back in the lineup in week one like the Cardinals did Buchanan a year ago? Because that was disastrous for him. He looked bad in week one.
Right, and that's I think what my biggest concern is, and why I struggle with these, oh, it's not a big deal people, where I'm like, no, it's a huge deal, because this is a guy. I mean, it's one thing if it's Carlos Dansby.
Right.
Right, that's been just this dynamic playmaker for his career, and he's 6 years in and it's year seven. Okay, whatever. But even Jordan Hicks, like, this dude hasn't been healthy. He's never played in Vance Joseph's systems. They need reps. They need time together. Like, that's the whole thing, is that, you know, and now, like you said, so if it is only 4 to 6 weeks and he's back week one, do you really want to throw him out there? I mean, after two practices and one and none padded? I mean, dude hasn't even taken a snap in padded practices yet. And we're just going to throw them out there game one. I don't know. That seems like a recipe for disaster.
Coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, we talk about the tragic end and unsurprising end of the Robert Kimdichie saga in Arizona. That's coming next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Robert Kimdichie is no longer an Arizona Cardinal. The last straw came in when he showed up to training camp. Kingsbury said, out of shape. John Gamadoro on the radio on Arizona Sports said he talked to a player, and apparently what he was told is that Kimdichie showed up to camp at 350 pounds when he's listed at 314, and obviously did not show any real interest or effort into being camp on time. And perhaps that was because he knew he's still recovering from the knee injury, but it was a bad look upon bad look upon bad look this offseason. And on top of that, on Sunday, he was due a $400,000 roster bonus. And all that led to Saturday evening. I was a little bit upset about it, because what did they do? The Cardinals closed up the stadium, so everyone had to be out of the stadium by 6:30. 6:40. They announced the release. Kimdichie released. Done with the Cardinals. And that leaves only one 2016 pick left on the roster, Brandon Williams, who isn't likely going to stay on the roster.
Yeah, who hasn't even practiced yet.
Nope.
So the crazy thing is, poor Jess has to – he's got a nice setup at the stadium. He can write a quick, 10-minute article on his laptop. And now he's like me. He's trying to thumb his way through an article on his phone.
And I'm driving. So I was on my way to dinner, and I pull up to as I'm pulling off the freeway and into the parking lot, and I look at my phone. I'm like, are you kidding me?
That's how it always works. But no, I mean, this was one of those, well, saw that coming, right? Like, and neither of us were against the pick. Now, it wasn't
our... I was super excited for the pick. I was thrilled.
It wasn't my first choice. I was bigger on... I like Chris Jones more. You were excited because you felt like that they had the people in place to kind of push him and kind of help him be the guy, right? Because they still had Calais when they drafted him, so that's a good guy to kind of take.
They had Frosty. They had
Corey. I mean, it was Betcher and who's the crazy defensive line coach?
Fredson Buckner.
Yeah, I mean, so they had a really nice. I mean, you felt like they got him into a safe environment to kind of coax out of him his issues, but the reality was twofold. One, he wasn't interested, like you said. Like, it never really seemed to interest him. But the second thing was, this is a guy, and this will be a conversation we have in a couple years about another draft pick, but this was a guy who has gotten away or gotten along on simply just being better physically than everybody else around him, even in college. That, I mean, that's how good he was. And now all of a sudden you get to the point where he's not the best athlete. He's not the strongest. He's not the fastest. You know, is he still unique in his ability? Absolutely. But he's not special by any means. There's 20 guys with Robert Kimdiche's ability in the NFL, if not more. Just natural ability I'm talking about. And so now all of a sudden it comes to the question of work ethic, and that was always going to be the concern with him, right? Is this a guy that's going to want to put the work in? And I mean, you and I mean, me a little more than you, but you and I can watch all the players we want to watch on film and do our grades and kind of look at it. But in the end, we can't grade their desire. We have no way to grade their heart and whether or not how bad they want to work. And that's unfortunately just a reality of the situation, and something that when it comes, you know, push comes to shove, you and I are always going to go with what we see on the tape, because until we get the information passed along to us from, you know, our guy inside, we have no idea what the negatives are, right? So,
right. Here's the thing. This turns out to be one of the biggest cards. Regardless, he was a 29th pick, so it's not like he was a premium pick. But here's the thing. This was a huge fail on the Cardinals organization, because here's what there were all the red flags. And remember, let's go back to the draft. They talked about how they went and had 5 different visits with him. So they spent a lot of time with him. Michael Bidwell, who's the BS, you know, he's got the BS barometer on him as the former federal prosecutor. Kimdiche had them all fooled for whatever reason. Maybe he had the right intentions, but this is a big fail because they knew of the red flags, they vetted the red flags, and then here's the thing. Every single red flag came up in the league. He would get dinged up. There was an effort problem. There was a discipline problem on the field, and there's a decision-making off the field. Every single one was a problem. And let's be honest, we've seen that across the league as well. Reuben Foster was another one. The things that were concerns in college have continued to be concerns in the pros. And maybe teams are overthinking things a little bit. For every Tyrann Mathieu, there are probably 50 guys that are who they are. And we saw flashes from Kimdiche, because it seems like he can never stay doing what he's supposed to, because last offseason, apparently, he was doing things right. He was disciplined in the defense. But then when he got on the field, he would get out of his area. He would get out of his gap. He'd try to play hero ball, and then he got benched. He has flashes, or he makes progress, gets hurt, and takes back. And he just could never stay on track because whatever reason.
Well, and the thing is, like, when you go with, you know, talking about Mathieu, where does Tyrann Mathieu get drafted? The 3rd round. You know, where does a guy like that's still causing headaches nearly daily? And Tyreek Hill, where did he get drafted? What, the 5th or 6th round? So that's the thing, is like when you talk about taking a chance on a guy, like, is the 1st round really the area to take the chance on? And it seems like when you do that, you're just asking for trouble. You're asking to, you know, to draft Kimdiche. You're asking to draft Robert Foster. You're just asking for those issues. And let's not forget, like, Robert Foster has been a good player when he's in the NFL. He's rarely been able to be on the field because of off-field issues, and now an injury. But, you know, when you look at it, whatever plagued him coming out was a problem already. And so when you look at it from that perspective, the car, I mean, there was a big group of people that were like, the Cardinals need to draft Robert Foster. And can you imagine if they're back to back with Kim Dichie and Foster?
Oh my gosh. But it's not like Kim Dichie and Hassan Reddick have been.
But at least Hassan Reddick's not a, you know what, or jackass. I can say that on this show. But, you know, he Reddick's not a jackass. He hasn't been a very good football player. And it sucks, but at least he's not a, you know, detriment to society type stuff. So that's what it comes down to. Kim Dichie just falls into that category of the talent was always there. It was just always going to be about the dedication, and you can't make somebody want to love the game. And as cliche and cheesy as it sounds, that's just the unfortunate reality, is that you can't make somebody want to do something.
Conan, next on the final spot of the C-Red, Rise Up C-Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Talk a little bit about the roster moves the Cardinals have made. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the final segment of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. The Cardinals have made some interesting roster moves, aside from Robert Kim Dichie being cut. So they had three roster spots left. Now, they had to because they signed Matt Longacre a week ago, which seemed like a pretty solid fit. Played in a Wade Phillips defense for the last few years, and the Wade Phillips defense is the same, more or less, as the Vance Joseph defense. He's had some production. He can do a little bit. He can do a little bit in the pass rush. He's a little productive. He's high energy. He's smart, and he plays special teams. Right?
The Matt Shaughnessy role, right?
That's what we thought. But 4 days later, they cut him. No one knows why. That doesn't make any sense. And Kingsbury himself said he's got, you know, every component that you want in a football player, and apparently what someone else, which is easy to get rid of as well. That was an head-scratching move. They follow that up on Tuesday with signing veteran Andre Branch, a guy who came and visited the Cardinals in June, reportedly. It adds another veteran who has played for Vance Joseph before. What do you like about the addition of Branch? And for me, I thought Longacre was a perfect fit because he's the perfect number four outside linebacker in the rotation. What do we get from Andre Branch?
The question I have now is Brooks Reed, not like, I know he's off the PUP, but are they still kind of concerned? Because Branch seems closer to like a three than a four. So, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, it is what it is. He's a veteran. I say this. I think if push came to shove and you asked me why, I would say that it's because Vance Joseph coached Andre Branch in Miami, and so it's just a little bit of an easier thing for him. And that would be the only thing I can think of, honestly, because Longacre's younger. He's a higher motor player. They have almost similar statistical output throughout their career,
and he doesn't have to make an adjustment to that the outside backer.
Yeah, and so it's odd. I mean, it definitely is. I would say I don't think that it's like one of those, oh, they got worse or got better. I just think it's an odd decision, and if you ask me why they did it, and this is a guess, but I would guess it has simply to do with Vance's comfort level with Andre over his comfort level with Longacre.
And for me, I have a suspicion that perhaps that the situation with this is that they signed Longacre. They had the conversation with Branch back in June. For whatever reason, the Cardinals weren't quite interested enough, or he wasn't willing to. His price tag was too high. But even after they signed Longacre, maybe it was the case where Andre's agent calls and said, okay, we're ready. And so knowing that that was coming, they went ahead and released Longacre and to bring him in for whatever reason. But now the interesting thing is they still have two roster spots open, which I'm still puzzled at why they would still have two roster spots open when they're still practicing. Fill those spots unless they've got something in the works, but I haven't heard anything, and you haven't heard anything, have you?
No, I haven't heard anything. It seems almost like it's just they're gonna take their time with this and kind of wait to see what happens on maybe some cuts, and then they don't have to make any moves on their roster to coincide with it.
Maybe. I see, obviously, I think there would be, on the offensive line would make sense, because their only real experience outside the starters is Riso Diambo, who's got, what, I think 2 years, maybe three in the league. And obviously Max Garcia, but he's still on PUP. Defensive line might not be a bad thing. And depending on DJ Swearinger, maybe safety becomes a thing that you have to do.
Yeah, the Swearinger thing's concerning because we haven't heard anything about Swearinger like you talked about at the beginning with his soft tissue injury. I mean, they're not even telling us what part of the body. It's just soft tissue. And then we haven't heard much in the way of overly positive praise with Deontay Thompson or Jalen Thompson. So is it going to, you know, Josh Shaw's getting a lot of run there. Who is the other guy that's getting some run there right now?
Jonathan Owens, I think, is ahead of the rookies. But, yeah, he's the one who's gotten a little bit of if you're looking at the rotation right now, it's Buddha, Shaw, then Owens, then Thompson, Deontay, then Jalen, then Tyler Sigler.
Yeah, so it's just, I mean, it's interesting that they haven't at least brought in a veteran to kind of be in that role if DJ, like you said, is out for an extended period of time. You know, it's an interesting strategy, and again, I think it goes back to what we talked about of it's a different way to do things, and Cliff's going to do it his way.
Yeah, and with that, I would, for all we know as well, by the time this drops, by the time this episode drops Wednesday afternoon, those spots will be full. So it might be obsolete. So if you're listening to the show and they've already made the moves, go ahead and laugh at us. Say we're dumb, but hey, that's it. And we'll go ahead and wrap up the show like that. We'll be back next week. We'll probably be talking about more about training camp and looking ahead to the preseason opener next Thursday. On behalf of Rise Up See Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com. That's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!